You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome to your favorite day of the week. I am Anthony Irwin. I am joined by Adam Morris. We have a special guest, Matt Moore of the Action Network and Spread the Floor podcast. This is Locked On NBA. How you guys doing?
You asking both of us? That's terrible
at
hosting.
At the same time. I always like to, you know, no, honestly, I can't even cop for myself. I'll start with Matt. Matt, how you doing?
What's cracking? Is that a thing? That was a thing from like in the mid and like the early 2000s was what's cracking was a thing.
You can always tell who is actually cracking, old enough to actually crack, like every time they stand up when they ask who's cracking.
That's starting to be me, sadly. And I got to say, Matt and I sit next to each other for basketball games here in Denver, both located in the Denver area. And I haven't seen you for like a month. I'm starting to miss you, Matt.
Starting to. That's the key. You won't ever actually get there until like training camp. And then you'll be like, it's so good to see you. And then the first game of the season will come and you're like, God, I'm tired of sitting for this moron.
Oh, come off it.
The way today is going to go, I'm honestly just, this is the only hosting I'm going to do. I'm going to throw to Adam. And this is Adam's show. Adam is interested in the gambling angle, so we brought Matt on here to talk about it. I'm just going to get out of the way. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find us. Let's jump right into this. Adam, do your thing.
So absolutely. So Matt is writing for the Action Network, which has an emphasis on sports gambling and different aspects of betting and daily fantasy sports. I thought it'd be great to have you on because there was sort of, I think a pretty big deal with the NBA and MGM this week. But I want to start actually by going back a little bit. The NBA had traditionally been opposed to really any type of cooperation with sports gambling. 20 years ago, it was sort of a bad word, sports gambling, merging with sports, no way. What are some of the things that have happened that have led to the NBA not just changing stance, but seemingly being very aggressive in trying to be at the forefront of whatever changes are coming? What has changed with the league?
So I think part of it, I talked to some folks in the NBA, and there's an interview I did with Scott Kaufman Ross, who's head of gaming for the NBA. He's vice president, head of gaming. Really smart guy. I spoke with him and some other folks in the league, as well as some sports, some books, some odds makers, to kind of get a sense for exactly what the evolution was. A lot of it, honestly, is the internet. So the league kind of established its position back from the 70s and 80s onward of it's illegal and it's prohibited and like it's, you know, it happens in Vegas, but what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. But that was like really was the thing was that there's Vegas and there's the rest of the world. And as far as the rest of the world goes, and everywhere that the NBA operates, it's illegal. And so like we don't think it's good for the game. Like we have concerns about all these things. And what really kind of happened was when the internet happened and offshore books started being a thing, and it really became this momentum. And there's so many people gambling on it now anyway. There's the kind of cynical way to look at it, and then there's the optimistic way to look at it. And the optimist way to look at it is that the league kind of recognized technologies are changing, attitudes are changing. This was probably going to become law anyway. And so they wanted to embrace it, and they wanted to kind of lead the charge on it in order to make sure that they were able to take care of their game and maintain the integrity of their sport. The skeptical, cynical side of it would be the NBA saw how much money there was to be made here. There
right.
is just like an obscene amount of money to be made for them. Regardless of what happens with the so-called integrity fee, they're still going to benefit generously, hugely from sports betting. And as a result, that kind of shifted their approach to it. And the league started taking a more active approach and looked at it. And really when they realized that the Supreme Court challenge done by New Jersey, by former Governor Chris Christie, that once it became apparent, like, because even back when they first held arguments in the court, and this is before that, like when they were looking at what the briefs were going to look like, it was pretty apparent, like, oh man, Pabst was like, it's not going to stand. Like there's just not a whole lot of ways to argue against it because of certain ways that the court has evolved, and that a lot of that gets into like precedent the court has set in recent decades. So once that started happening, like the league was very much like, we got to get out in front of this. As is kind of typical for the NBA, the NFL is dragging its feet. They continue to be like, gambling is bad, which is absurd.
Right.
And baseball continues to be like, until really this week, was like, gambling's not good. It's really, I mean, we had the Pete Rose thing. It's not great. And now they're kind of, well, maybe it's good. And
that
hockey
was, that was one of the first things I thought of with, like, at the advent of legal gambling was, if baseball allows this, they have to go back on their stance with Pete Rose, right?
Yeah, I'm not even going to touch that. I don't even know what that's going to be like, but that's the whole thing. So anyway, that's kind of where the league is, has kind of evolved to, is the technology is such now that it's going to change a lot of it. And when they realized that there was it was going to be legalized, there became a lot of incentive for the league to try and get out of it. The biggest thing that the league wants is it wants to be in the room. Right. Wants to have its voice heard on these issues. Now, as part of that, you can bet that the league is going to say we are owed certain amounts of income from wherever it comes from for our product that's being used in these events. And they're going to exert their massive global branding influence. And they did that this week with the MGM deal to pursue those means. But even with the money you can see here being used, it wasn't all that much. It was $25 million over 3 years of the MGM deal. That's nothing. Right. That's an abaca year, right?
Right, right.
But it is notable that it's a first step in developing this relationship. And so really the more it kind of seemed about it was the league, the world has changed. And so the league's approach to these things has changed as well.
Well, I think, so you mentioned the technology shift. I think you said something about a little bit of money offshore or something like that. I think what I read, and I'm going to have a link to that interview with Scott Kaufman Ross, who's the head of fantasy and gaming for the NBA. Really fascinating stuff. It'll be in the description of the show. Is something like $5 billion a year is done in gambling in Vegas. $150 billion is done offshore. So such a significant portion of the pie is being done, you know, outside the means of, I guess, you know, something that I think the league just sees this enormous opportunity, something like 97% of the market out there available for the taking. So with this partnership with MGM, it's not just the league that they're offering, but it's also the data. Is that right? I mean, the league is selling, or not really selling, providing real live-time, in-game, during-the-action data to MGM for them to be able to create live prop bets. Am I understanding that correctly?
So the value for MGM is honestly mostly built around the branding aspect. It's
okay.
They get to be like the official partner of the NBA, because like you can do live betting as it stands now. You can't do as much as they are going to be able to do now.
Right.
But that all stuff is probably going to come anyway. Like the NBA, one of the reasons that the NBA has been as out in front of this as possible, the betting possibilities for NBA go so far beyond the other sports, because it's one thing if you're going to bet in game on a line, on who's going to win, on what the score is going to be. And in the NFL, you can be like, oh, we could do like over under catches or this quarterback, right. But the options are very limited. In the NBA, it's infinite, because you have all of these combinations of, is LeBron James going to score over under 9.5 points in the fourth quarter? Are the Celtics going to have over under 9.5 rebounds in the fourth quarter? All of these things shift dramatically within the course of the game, and the context of the game incentivizes the betting, right? So it's like, oh, they're making a comeback, I'm going to jump on this now for them to win. The live betting right. aspect dramatically shifts things with the NBA. So there's a lot of value to MGM getting the official data feed, because they're able to say to every bettor that's out there, if you want standardized, no questions, the most solid data, we partner with the NBA. Anything you're going to get lines on from us comes from data. The results come from data that comes directly from the NBA. And there's value to that. But the bigger key for that is there's now a fee attached to the NBA for that, which means that anybody else, because that's now the standard, right? MGM's now the standard holder, because having the official data is than not having the official data. Now, professional gamblers are going to make a big case that who cares? It doesn't matter. Like, that's not all that valuable. Like, we have all these results. Like, these things have always been out there. The difference that I keep running into in these conversations is there's such a massive gap between who the NBA is interested in and professional gamblers, and they are not professional gamblers. They are marketing to your average fan that is like, oh, well, they're partnered with MGM, so I know the data is good there. I know everything's on the up and up there, so I'll just bet there. I'll use their app.
And there's a convenience factor here, too, because I read, I believe in your piece, or maybe it was in one of the ones you linked to, that one of the big holy grails for the NBA, I mean, this MGM thing seems like a small but important step, but they really want to get more and more states to legalize gambling and for you to be able to place mobile bets using your smartphone. And at that point, you're talking about the casual fan using official data, official updated prop bets and lines and things like that. That just opens up to so much more. That's the gambling you're talking about, where everything's at your fingertips, and it just becomes so much easier to gamble multiple times on a single game.
Right. So, like, and part of that is the speed is really important, because you're going to want to be able to make sure that you can get your bets in and have it transact as quickly as possible and have the most updated data when you're putting those numbers in before, you know, because if you're delayed on it, it might get locked out. Like, the speed of all these things really matters. It was crazy. I will tell you, like, one of the things I did, and I wrote about this for Action, was out in Vegas, I was betting on Summer League games, and I got the Westgate app. So I was actually betting on games while at the arena. It was a lot of fun. Like,
yeah, I could see that being addicting, almost dangerously so.
Yeah, the possibility of it is real.
I mean, this is a highly addictive thing, right?
It's like putting it's like every casino having on every corner or in every room you have the ATM. It's like, oh, yeah, the money's just right there. I'll just go get a little bit more.
Right. Well, it's funny, too, that
I just pictured Adam walking up to a cliff like, this looks dangerous.
What's funny, though, is like there's a lot of conversation from the NBA about. They want to make it safe for the game, and they want to make it safe for the fans. This is one thing I thought was really interesting from the conversations, is there's a real conversation being had about limits on props. So the NBA is talking about having a limit on how much a house can take on a player prop, so that you don't have somebody walking in and like later finding out like, oh, someone came in and put $500,000 down on J.R. Smith to score 22 or to score over 22.5 points.
Right.
That was picking a player completely at random, by the way.
Like, something tells me it was less random, maybe subconsciously.
And besides, if you're going to bet on anybody, why would you bet? If you're going to try to influence the game, why would you try and influence the JR who could forget how many points he has at any moment?
That's true.
How many bowls of soup will he throw this season? Over, under 1.5.
Oh, gosh.
So that's the thing, is the prop bets are talking about putting limits on them. The NBA wants to be in the conversation because they're like, look, if we put limits on the prop bets, that's the easiest way to curtail any semblance of being able to believe that there's some sort of weirdness going on, which is crazy. I mean, it's going to be crazy anyway, because like the players just don't – the money is never going to be there for the players to have enough incentive. Those limits, I think, are an interesting conversation to have, and that's another tension I think is going to be found between, you know, pro bettors who are going to be like, no, if I want to do this, like I want to be able to bet like $5,000, $10,000 at a time versus the NBA, who wants like your casual fan who's going to be like, I'll bet you $20 that LeBron's going to go off for 41 tonight, and being able to get that bet.
It'd be much easier to have 100 of those guys than to have one of the big boys, I guess. But let's get before we go to a break here. I want to ask, just big picture, where's this all headed? Where do you think this settles on, and what's the time frame? So this MGM thing, kind of a big first step, but do you see the mobile thing picking up traction in the next, you know, year, two, five? What are we talking about? And how many states do you see legalizing sports gambling so that they can, you know, get in on the action?
So we've got an updated tracker on Action Network, and I haven't looked at it in a while. I know that Mississippi's opening betting this weekend.
Okay.
They're up there. New Jersey's active. Delaware's active. Vegas, obviously. Nevada, obviously. I think the states that already have active casinos are going to be the first ones to really – that's the easiest transition. Like, I'd be surprised if Colorado wasn't done within 2 years. I would be surprised if California wasn't done within 2 years. I think by the end of in a year and a half, I think 2 years from when the release was out. So like, you know, the spring of 2020, I think we're going to see a real transformation in terms of what's out there. A lot of this comes into, so I mentioned earlier that data. One of the reasons that that's really attracted to the league as far as setting a market for that data with MGM is the bookmakers are still going to be really resistant to all of these kind of deals. But the league is less concerned about that, because once you open this up in states, it means that if you're an app and you have the backing, like if you have the if you're a VC funded app that operates in that state and you get licensed by the state regulators, however that the legislature works out, once you're a licensed book, that means that you don't have to have a casino. You don't have to have brick and mortar. You don't have to have any of that if the state doesn't require it. You can be – and this is why FanDuel and DraftKings are all on top of this, is that's going to be your biggest change. In all these states where this operates, FanDuel and DraftKings and every site that does daily fantasy is going to transition to daily fantasy and betting. And that's going to be transformative. You're going to see this become a much wider part of the conversation over the next 2 years.
We're going to take a quick second, but I want to build on that FanDuel part, because that's really interesting to me. Because this to me, you mentioned the internet earlier. FanDuel and daily fantasy stuff, like that played a legit role to me. So we're going to take a quick second here. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that. So Matt, you mentioned FanDuel, and to me, like this felt like the real turn, aside from the congressional stuff and the constitutional stuff that was going on there. But while FanDuel was at its peak, there was a bit of a conversation going on about, like, this feels a lot like gambling. This feels like legal gambling. What are we doing here? And I feel like that conversation morphed in from, okay, so this probably is gambling, to, well, then why don't we just legalize gambling?
It was started before that, honestly. The offshore books, I think, is the big part of it. And I think that states also, like, it's another driver of revenue, right? Especially, I mean, I don't want to get into all these dynamics, but if you notice, the Supreme Court decision was backed by all the conservative judges. Chris Christie, not exactly the most liberal dude in the world, pushed this initially. This is very much a state's rights issue, but it's also tied to, look, if you're a state that wants to cut taxes at every turn, how are you going to create revenues? And this is another opportunity for them to generate revenues at a state level without having to raise taxes. It's a Republican dream. You generate revenue for the state by increasing freedom without raising taxes. It's an incredible, like, that's like the dream for them. So that's part of the dynamic of this. But I do think that I think the biggest thing is football. This is why it's ironic that the NFL continues to act in stupid ass way it does about it, is that the NFL is the biggest driver of it, because it's that and March Madness. And like, once you started a lot of there's been a cultural shift too. In the 90s, like Adam and I could talk about this, like in the 90s, like it was really kind of like a faux pas, like gambling, like, ooh, like in evangelical circles, it was considered like a sin. Like it was one of those dangers, but much like marijuana has become a lot more accepted as people start to realize, like, oh, there's actually not as much of a danger there. And there are real dangers and risks with gambling. Like you are correct in that it's addictive. And these are things like I think about pretty often is like making sure that things are people have the right attitudes and they're in the right place to do this stuff, et cetera. But at the same time, it's also like when you have the internet to expose you to this much stuff, you're going to get a higher level of people wanting to do it too. And once that becomes so prevalent, it becomes, if this is happening and it's accepted, we would rather have it. And this is the NBA's position too, which is if it's happening, we'd rather have it regulated, controlled, monitored, and that we get our cut, rather than it being.
I think all of those things, though, to be honest with you, I think the league is earnest in wanting to regulate and control it, and also understanding that there's a profit with it. So I think both things can be true here. But let's segue from gambling here, because this is the Friday show here at Locked On NBA, and we like to, Anthony and I in particular, really like to have a little bit of fun on our Fridays, the end of a long week. It's Anthony doesn't know how to be serious. He could only have fun. So what I want to do with play a quick game here. We're going to go through some of the week's news, and I just want you to give a letter grade A through F.
Can I do five star reviews like it's a Yelp review rather than
we could do it rather than a grade. Yeah, we could do five stars. All right, yeah, same thing. So how many stars? I'll just say, how would you grade LeBron's speech to his son's team about there's no shame in coming off of the bench?
4 stars. It's an insightful kind of look at LeBron and what he values and how he approaches things. A little corny, as all things LeBron, as all things LeBron are corny. I'll give it a solid 4 stars. I like anything that shows kind of his human side, and I like that he's willing to let those things be shared now. That
I felt like maybe he was kind of like, hey, there's no shame in coming off the bench.
Jordan Clarkson.
He's talking to his son's team, but he's also kind of talking to his actual team. Anthony, what do you think? How many stars you give it him?
I gave it a 5. I think the number one thing, if you aren't a superstar in the NBA, the worst thing you can think you are is a superstar. So, like, accept your role, and then that's a great way to carve out a niche for yourself. And I thought that was really – Matt, I think you said it really well. That was really insightful on LeBron's part to tell Rajon Rondo, hey – Lonzo's starting, and this is how this is going to go.
I would think it was more that he's talking to young guys. He's talking to young players like Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram and Kyle Kuzma with his starting lineup of Rondo, Lance, LeBron.
Oh, God.
All those guys are starting. Don't get upset. Accept your role.
It would have been great if he said, like, look, you can be a big baller and still come off the bench. then I think it would have been great. Let's move on to the next one. How would you grade Giannis's first attempt at boxing? Did you guys see this?
No.
You missed this. Both of you missed this.
Yeah.
Have you heard of the internet?
It's terrifying, though. The idea of, like, that reach is terrifying.
Well, first of all, Giannis has gone full Hulk this summer. Jeez, has been
photos. He looks massive. I give him 5 stars on the picture, and then, like, how he looks now. And I was like, mother of God.
He's winning Muscle Watch 2018, is he not?
Yep. Yeah, he's dominating.
Dominating it. Well, I guess we have to scale. I give him 5. I give him 4 stars for boxing. He definitely looked like a 7-footer out there. A little slow because, you know, that's a lot of distance to cover with the reach. But,
well, hey, maybe boxing will lead him to MMA, and MMA will lead him to Nikola Jokic's brother.
Yes.
And that'll be the free agency connection that pulls him to Denver when his deal is up.
I think we need to make a running gag, Anthony, where every week I come up with a conspiracy theory for a different superstar. Matt helped me out tremendously this week. How would you grade the Tristan Draymond beef/altercation?
This is bad. I gave it 1 star. I'm off board.
You know what? I'm gonna go the other way. I'll give it 4 stars. And the reason I'll give it 4 stars is Marcus Thompson's piece. It was what tied it together, because Marcus Thompson wrote about it and was like, a source said, like, no, nah, man, like, he sucker punched him, and it wasn't that bad. And, like, Draymond tried to spin on it. And anytime Draymond is having to, like, protect his public image, I am here for it. I was amused. I mean, I'm glad Tristan stood up for himself just because he got punked so badly in the finals. So, like, I'm a little happy for Tristan that he was able to be like, and, like, now he's a folk hero in Cleveland again. And, like, that's because he's going to need to have a, like, down the line, it's, you know what it's going to be. It's going to be, come on down to Tristan Thompson Motors, and we'll get you into a new Mazda.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, he just got himself a dealership.
Right down the street from J.R. Smith's, like, soup cafe.
I'm with you, Matt. I'm going to give it 4 stars because I'm with you. I like Tristan not, you know, not just getting over this and being like, whatever. I like him holding on to it. How would you guys grade KD's comment that OKC KD was the phony KD and Golden State KD is the real one?
I would grade it. I'll grade it 1 star. And here's why. I will say I have thoughts on this. I talked to Ty Lawson one time about KD, and it was like, it was, you know, back when Ty was still playing in Denver. And Ty and I were talking about KD one time, and he was like, the guy you guys see is not him. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, he is cold blooded. Like, he is just way more aggressive than he showed. Like, that KD is nice stuff is just, he's like, that is not that dude. He's like, you'll see one day. He's like, that is not that guy. And I always thought that was interesting. And, like, sure enough, kind of looks like, but the reason it's 1 star is, like, like one, well, yeah, but we like that guy better. Like everyone liked
you're going to laugh at this, Matt, for saying this. I said this on last week's show. I've turned. I like KD now. He's so.
Oh, I know why you like KD. I know why you like KD.
Because come on.
Denver and you're prepping. You're clearing the runway for that soft landing in free agency. No, I love KD. We love him. Denver. Here in Denver, we appreciate Kevin Durant.
That's right. That's how I'm putting it out there.
My thing with Durant is he spends a lot of time explaining himself. Like a lot of time.
But that's what I say. That's why I like him. He's so bad at this. And it's almost relatable. I too am very bad at this.
I agree. I have said this consistently that his whole like the XKCD cartoon where he's like, come to bed. No, there's someone wrong on the internet. Like that's relatable. Like this is the most relatable thing about here. But here's the only problem is that there's got to be a level where like you are important. Like you are a global as much. I'm like, I wrestle with this. Cause I'm like, is he like, he plays basketball. Like who is anybody really important? Like, is anybody really that much more important than anybody else? But in a societal structure, like, yeah, he is more important and he doesn't have to deal with all this. He doesn't have to get his blood up about it. And he can say like, yeah, but I choose to. And I get that, but I'm just like, how much of this is like, to me, it just seems like you need to like yourself. This is my big thing. Is I'm just like, you need to like you yourself and your life more. You need to feel better about yourself to the point where you're not bothered by what these people say, whoever it is, whether it's fans or media or trolls or whoever. Like,
I don't know if he'll get there. Well, he'll probably get there, but it might take.
In Denver.
He's not there now. He's clearly not there. All right, let's take a break, and then when we wrap up, we're gonna wrap up as we do every week over the summer, and we're going to look at things, little things that we appreciate and like about the NBA. We'll be right back. Anthony, I have to ask you, man. So there's the theory out there that Kobe does not like Lonzo because Lonzo likes LeBron. And I have to, before we do this, I have to ask you about this I don't know, appreciation triangle that's going on.
So
give me your expertise.
All right. On one hand, obviously, like this has to be pointed out, LeVar doesn't speak for Kobe. Like that's let's just, that needs to be, you'd be shocked how many people like were just running with this, like in Silver Screen and Rolls mentions, the comment section, Facebook, like all that stuff.
But there was the report that Kobe said something like, how did the Lakers pass on Tatum, right? Well, that's what's spawning this.
So the context to that was somebody had pointed out to Drew Hanlon, or Drew Hanlon pointed out to Kobe that Jason Tatum reminds him a lot of Kobe. And Kobe said, well, why didn't they draft Jason Tatum? So Kobe's basically saying, why didn't they draft Kobe again?
Right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so so that kind of leads into like one of my other takeaways here is, if there is somebody to be this petty, especially with LeBron, it would be Kobe. if there's a guy who would hold a grudge over this kind of thing that's this mundane, this stupid, it would be Kobe.
What was the thing you and I argued about, Anthony, about Kobe working out with them? Wasn't that a thing that we used to argue about?
It might be. I mean, here's the thing. I don't know if I want Lonzo Ball learning from Kobe. their games are so different.
I'm so here for Lonzo being like the child in a divorced parent relationship, and like LeBron just nonstop saying bad things about Kobe, and Kobe nonstop saying bad things about LeBron, and he has to pick a side. I'm so for this.
This is why I'm excited about the 4 years, because after after they fail to win the title, Kobe is not going to be able to resist.
Yeah, he's going to send out a tweet. He's going to send out something.
No, it's going to be some interview in China or something that's going to get out. It's going to be like, look, not everybody's me. And it's okay. LeBron's had a nice career, but not everybody. And then it's going to be on, and I am here for it. I am here for the internal destruction of the Los Angeles Lakers fan base. I am here for it.
That could be your number one little thing.
That's the like first little thing.
I'll give you my first little thing. I like that thing LeBron wears around his waist all summer that supports his back. I don't even know what it is, but I think it's hilarious. I like that.
He's got this little... How didn't I notice this?
You've never seen. He has like, it's like a reverse fanny pack. It goes on your back, but it's some type of back support. So when he's sitting, he's never at risk for hurting his back because he has this like lumbar support. It's, well, I mean, it's brilliant.
You carry Cleveland, the entire city of Cleveland, for as long as he did.
Well done. Well done. What do you got, Anthony?
My first one is not pulled up right now. All right, here we go. Here it is. Basketball looks hard. Like, I was watching golf. I was watching golf today, and like, you see these guys swing and they make it look so easy, but anybody who's ever played golf will say, myself included, golf is really effing hard. It's really frustrating because it looks like something that should be so easy and it's not. Whereas like basketball, you see like Joel Embiid walk by and you're like, I have to play the same sport that guy plays.
Yeah. Like, can I give you a hot take?
Yeah.
I think soccer players should be better than they are. I'm always unimpressed whenever I watch the world's greatest soccer players.
That's quite the take.
They miss such easy shots. It's the opposite. They make it look hard.
Yeah.
It's funny. When I took my wife to her first NBA game, that was when the game really clicked for her because she was like, they're so fast. And I was like, yes. Yeah. I was like, because this is the thing. The whole college thing is they try so much harder than the NBA guys do. They just try so much harder. And I finally explained it when after I went to that game. It made me realize, like, oh, an NBA player can glide to a loose ball, pick it up, dribble it in motion, and make an outlet pass and make it look so effortless because they are so much faster, more coordinated, and more skilled. That's the difference. Is the college guys, it looks like they're just, like, playing rugby because they can't get to the ball otherwise. Like, these other guys can get to the ball so much quicker.
Or this even is why the hand-eye coordination that goes into basketball. Like, football is, like, I think Hall of Fame game or something played by the time everybody's listening to this last night. And you watch some of these football players go up and make, like, a one-handed catch. And everybody's like, oh, my God, that's so crazy. And then you see, like, you see a basketball player go out, make that one-handed catch, not travel, and finish also. Like, that's insane. That's craziness to me.
This is a very please like our sport.
It is. It is. I don't mind doing that with football, though, because football is football.
My next one is I like Muscle Watch. And we talked about it earlier. It's one of my favorite parts of the summer. Somebody on
that's Stiff... because you're obsessed with Nikola Jokic.
well, I'm gonna. I hate that you brought him up because there was a picture, like the Nuggets tweeted out a picture. No, they tweeted out a picture of him working out at Red Rocks, Jokic, that is. And somebody's like, "Oh man, he looks so big. He looks so jacked." It was a photo from two summers ago. And it's like, guys, you got to stop this, man. You got to stop. You're seeing what you want to see here.
I don't mind. I'll tell you what. I like Muscle Watch much better than I like clowning little kids at basketball camps.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm going to swat you. I'm gonna, like, look at this kid. Look at him obliterate this little kid. It's just – and, like, that's a very, you know, inside the industry thing. I'm just like, man, I've written so many of those posts. I've seen everything you can do to embarrass a small child at a basketball camp. I'm really not impressed at this point.
That's why it was so great when Enes Kanter got clowned by that one kid. He dribbled between his legs and made the layup. It was incredible.
Oh, poor Kanter.
Matt, do you have another one?
I like the five word things going around on Twitter. I've enjoyed those have been a good time. I've done many of them. I've actually participated in many of them.
I've really enjoyed the team accounts that send out their you know, send out your five favorite Grizzlies things, and somebody was like trading Powell for Kwame Brown. Like, I really enjoyed that. Yeah. Sorry, man.
Anthony, you got another one?
I do have another one. This kind of actually plays off of the gambling conversation that we had earlier, in that with the NBA, nothing within reason feels like out of the question in terms of tweaks that could be made to the game, to the league, to the rules, whatever, or that coaches are always open to new ideas and things that might give them these different advantages. Like, I really enjoy, we talked about last week, the evolution of the game, but from the league standpoint itself, like, they, if there's something that they think could make the league more fun, they're willing to at least give it a try in the G League or in Summer League.
Yeah. I'll give a last one here. I like the NBA Africa game, which is coming up August 4th, I believe, on Saturday. So it'll be tomorrow when you're listening to this. I like the game, not because it's like a great game. In fact, it's actually a pretty bad one. But I just like that the NBA is doing these types of things, that they have all of these camps and academies and programs around the world and really growing it, doing something that and having success doing growing the sport all over the globe. I just think it's so cool. And we see the results of that already with how much the game has grown internationally from a fan standpoint, but also from a talent standpoint. I look forward to the day when we're not, it's not crazy when players are coming from the Congo or from Turkey or wherever, where it's just that makes up an equal proportion of the league as any other countries.
So when you said the NBA Africa game and I laughed, I wasn't laughing at the Africa game. I was laughing at an article that I had to write today or yesterday for Silver Screen and Roll that Luol Deng was hoping to prove to Rob Pelinka out there that he can still play in the NBA Africa. That was so sad. Man, poor Luol.
I have one more.
Go ahead.
Little thing I liked. I like WNBA entry passes.
Oh, that's a good one.
I saw you tweeting about this.
Like it's been rattling around my head. Just I watched Summer League for 2 weeks, and just no one capable of getting a 7-footer a ball. Just nobody can get the ball into the post at all. And like the WNBA players are so good at it. Like all of the lead passes are perfectly timed and hit them just in stride. All of the entry passes are never deflected. Like it's just great. It's just really sound fundamental passing, and I like it very much.
And they don't have to. The players that are receiving the pass don't wind up having to give up position, because that's one of the things I always see in the NBA where somebody's posting up. Adam, you're a big guy. You can speak to this.
Oh, it trust me, man. It's the most frustrating thing about playing basketball is I know people, like I know the exact people I play with who know how to throw that pass, and it's a short list.
I'm on it, right? I'm on it. Thanks, Adam. Thanks, man. Yeah. well, that'll do it, right?
That'll do it.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Matt. That the stuff, the insight on gambling is really, really interesting, and I don't know if we really necessarily talked about it that much, but the revenue and this might actually affect the cap down the road, right?
Yeah, so like it's going to be a while, but I think that we're going to see the estimates, I think, go up over the next 5 years. There's no telling how much it's going to be or how gradual it will be, but I do expect that there's going to be some cap increases, maybe small, and maybe like, you know, it may wind up being like less than a million or a million, but it's going to be like a little bit extra. And people there are like, well, that doesn't really mean anything. I'm like, look, that's the difference between Danny Ainge having to give up Avery Bradley 2 years ago or a year ago and him not. So like that's the difference that we're talking about.
Really, really good stuff. Thanks, Matt, for hopping on. Thanks, Adam, for taking the reins today. I would say you did a good job, but our our ads are going to be all over the place. David, this was his fault. I just want to make sure you guys know this. Thanks, everybody, for listening. You guys, we'll be back at it again next week. We have some ideas that we're throwing around show-wide, talking about the various shows that are on Locked On NBA that we're trying to figure out to get us through the slow period that is August. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Friday.